Coming up on Tech News Today, Yahoo gets a new look. Google shows off more of Project Glass, and you only need $1,500 to get your own. And you have to start a contest as well. Plus, Spotify wants to pay less. Who doesn't? All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, and now an online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT2. And by Podio from Citrix. Manage your projects with files, instant communication, and collaboration all in one workspace. Start using Podio today. It's free. Just visit Podio.com to sign up, set up your first workspace, and invite your team to get started. Work the way you want to with Podio.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zachter.
And I'm Jason. No, I'm not. I'm dark, apparently.
Okay. You are still Jason Howe.
I am.
Behind that blackness.
Yes.
This is still Tech News Today, the show where we try to get you up to date on all the best stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feeds. Wow. Have you been waiting for Yahoo to change something significant so you can get all judgy on CEO Marissa Meyer? Well, happy news for you. Ms. Meyer posted to Yahoo's blog today that the company has launched a revamped homepage. It features an infinite news scroll that adapts to your tastes and those of your Facebook friends, a simplified number of info sources, and a very prominent email logo up in the upper right also comes along with it. U.S. users should see it now or over the next couple of days, and international users can visit it at us.yahoo.com if they want to get a peek.
Google announced Project Glass almost a year ago, and today the company has expanded pre-orders and released a new overview video showing off how the glasses display and interactions and services. Pre-orders started at Google I.O. in 2012 for developers and some journalists. Now the company is expanding pre-orders to bold, creative individuals, their words. To apply, you can tell Google what you'd do if you had Glass on Twitter or Google Plus in 50 words or less. You have to include the "If I Had Glass" hashtag. You can also add up to 5 photos or even include a short video. You do need to be 18 years of age, though, and live in the U.S.
Yesterday, Apple was attacked by hackers who infected some employees' computers with malware designed for OS X using a flaw in Java. Reuters reports that the people who hit Apple also launched attacks on Facebook last Friday. Apple has since pushed out a security update to patch Java.
Strategy Analytics released their fourth quarter shipment estimates for smartphones, and the iPhone jumped from 6 million to 27.4 million shipped to retake the top spot. The former champ Samsung Galaxy S3 slipped from 18 million to 15.4 million and down to third place behind the iPhone 4S, which rose from 16.2 to 17.4 million shipped. Galaxy S3 was released in May, and a new model is expected in March.
With the recent hacking attacks on many large companies now, the U.S. government is stepping in. The Associated Press is reporting that the White House will release a new strategy tomorrow outlining penalties and fines and trade restrictions against countries that are shown to participate. This comes after security firm Mandiant traced many of the attacks back to the People's Liberation Army based in Shanghai. China has denied any involvement in any of these recent attacks, but both the Washington Post and the Times have stated that China was to blame.
Walt Mossberger's put together a review of Republic Wireless. That's the company that gives you unlimited data, voice, and text for $19 per month without a contract. Now, Mossberg says the service isn't perfect. Calls are made over Wi-Fi and the Sprint network. However, there's a lack of seamless handoff. So if you're on a call that starts on Wi-Fi, you move to cellular, the call drops. Mossberg also wasn't a fan of the sole handset offered, which is the Motorola Defy XT.
UK regulator Ofcom only raised £2.3 billion in its 800 megahertz 4G spectrum auction. That's a bit shy of the £3.5 billion they'd hoped for. BT, Vodafone, Telefonica O2, EE, and Joint Venture 3 all snagged some nice valuable swatches of spectrum. Even so, the whole thing was small potatoes when you compare it to the 3G auction several years ago, which netted £22.5 billion.
After the Financial Times reported that Foxconn had enacted a hiring freeze at most of its Chinese facilities due to reduced demand for the iPhone 5, and that hiring would be halted until at least the end of March, a Foxconn spokesman now tells Bloomberg that more employees returned from the Chinese New Year break than a year earlier, and that the decision wasn't related to iPhone 5 production at all.
Do they usually just go off and break and then disappear?
It sounds like they took shorter breaks than they did a year ago.
Ah, gotcha. Mary Jo Fuller reports on ZDNet that her sources say Microsoft just completed the first milestone build of Windows Blue. Blue is somewhere between a service pack and a new version of Windows. Microsoft plans to make major OS refreshes a yearly event, and this would be the first one of those. For those who follow it, Windows Blue supposedly identifies itself as version 6.3, the way Windows 8 identifies itself as 6.2.
Twitter officially launched its ads API, allowing marketers to buy Twitter ads through third-party tools. A similar move helped Facebook boost its revenue. Five partners are taking part in the launch: Adobe, Hootsuite, Salesforce, Shift, and TBG Digital.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a high-quality website, a professional website, a portfolio, and now a store. That's the big new thing. We're always telling you about the mobile responsive designs and the drag-and-drop functionality. I can't believe it took me that long to switch Sword and Laser over to Squarespace 6, but we got it there, and it's just so easy to use now when I'm updating things like the calendar. But now you can also do a Squarespace store. Squarespace Commerce provides a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution integrated to work with every Squarespace template, allows for sales of both physical and digital goods. So if you're selling MP3s or actual good old-fashioned CDs, you can use it for either one or both. Hardcover books, ebooks. You get a fast merchant account set up so you can accept payments right away. Single interface for order management. You can track your orders, provide customer email updates, print shipping labels, add coupons. Squarespace Commerce is part of the business plan subscription, which starts at $24 a month when you sign up for a year. It's $30 a month if you go monthly. So go give it a shot. You don't have to give them any money right now. Just try out Squarespace. Sign up for a free account. You don't have to give them anything but an email address. No credit card. Just try out. Start building your site. If you decide to purchase it, use the offer code TNT2, and that gets you 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, whether they're monthly or annual subscriptions. Of course, you save more if you buy annual because you get 10% off the whole year. And don't forget about free domain registrations with that annual plan. You'll get a free domain name to boot if you sign up for the whole year at once. At squarespace.com, use that offer code TNT2. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank Squarespace for their continuing support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us to discuss the stories of the day, good to have Peter Rojas, co-founder of Gadget.com, now an AOL. You're back in the fold again.
I am. You know, it feels like a completely different company, though my employee number is still the same as last time I worked there. So
is that right? They preserve that for you?
Yeah, it was a little funny when I like this six-digit number had been buried in my subconscious. For all these years.
Oh, that's funny. Well, okay, congratulations. It sounds like things are going well for you guys.
Yeah, it was. We're really excited. And obviously, I have the history there with Engadget and Joystick and some of the other sites that I created and sold to AOL a few years ago. And what we've built with Gadget is so complementary to what they're doing with Engadget. And so you're going to see a lot of really cool integration of the two sites. And Gadget will continue on. It'll still be very focused on the data and product recommendation and stuff like that we've been doing. And we'll start to see some deeper collaboration between the two sites.
Excellent. Well, good luck to you and Ryan. I'll be cheering for you guys and watching what you do. Let's start off. It's great to have you along to talk about the stories of the day. Iaz, what's going on with this Project Glass thing?
Yeah, so Google's expanding its Glass pre-orders through a contest, as Sarah mentioned. The contest works like this. You get 50 words or less. You can include up to 5 photos and a video, 15 seconds maximum on that video. You explain what you would do if you had Glass with the hashtag if I had Glass. It works on Twitter and Google+. Open to U.S. residents only. And by the way, if you're chosen, you still have to pay $1,500 for this. It's not a contest that's giving it away. Google's deciding who gets to pay and get a pre-order in now.
I won.
With the contest, Google also showed off a video demo of Google Glass. Again, it's all that first-person perspective. Video shows interaction with Glass saying, "Okay, Glass," and then some kind of command. The display looks a lot like the Google Now cards. Shows Hangouts, recording videos, navigation, getting flight details. Peter, what do you think of this contest, or do you have a different opinion about Glass now that you've seen another video demo?
Well, I think that it's a little cheap on their part to require someone to enter the contest, and if they win, to buy one of the to buy the glasses. I think that they should just give them away to people. I mean, certainly Google can afford it at this point, and you know, either make it open and let the first, you know, whatever number of people pay for them, or not. But to do it a contest and then require people to pay just seems a little weird to me. I don't think I've ever seen anyone do that before.
Does it seem? I mean, obviously, you're right. Google can afford to give away probably as many units as they'd like. But does that sort of weed out the people who just want to win something, who maybe wouldn't take it seriously, maybe wouldn't give the glasses enough of a spin, and maybe write a thoughtful blog post about their experience, that sort of thing?
That's well, I mean, I'd say you could still have people. I mean, I think it should be either or, right? It's like either let people pay for it and not have to go through this. You know, kind of this like monkey dance kind of thing where they have to do all this social media nonsense to get a chance to buy something. That just seems really corny to me.
Tom, is this?
Yeah, it kind of bugs me too, actually. I get the, at Google I.O., they said, look, if you want to develop for this, we're going to have a developer version, but you're going to have to pay $1,500 for it. And that made some kind of sense. But having a contest where then you still have to pay the $1,500, I'm curious why. I think, Sarah, you're theory makes the best sense is that it's to keep people serious about it. And maybe the contest is to make sure they're extra serious or they're going to do something really interesting with it. So it's less of a contest and more of like an application. But yeah, I mean, Google gives away hardware all the time. Obviously, it's not as close to alpha state as this is. So I understand them wanting to limit it, but wonder where they came up with $1,500.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at this contest. It reminds me a bit of when Google was rolling out Fiber. This idea of getting communities and people super excited, word-of-mouth advertising effectively for Google Glass, although I don't know if they really need that kind of, I mean, a 50-word or less post explaining why what you would do with it. I guess that'd get people excited about what applications you can do with Google Glass, because I'm sure Google doesn't really know exactly what it could do. Even with this video demo, it's like, great.
this is a way for Google to figure out what we do with this.
Like, we've got this great display on your head all the time. What do we do?
The thing is, like, you know, do any of us think that if they had just announced today that they were going to have a limited number of sales for the general public and have some sort of lottery, that they wouldn't be getting just as much buzz and press around that?
No, they would definitely be getting as much buzz or press. I think the whole thing with this is to drive people to Google Plus, first of all, but also to say, like, we want to have some stars, some people who are doing something that we can point to and make a big deal out of later as well as now.
It is kind of telling, though, isn't it, that it's Google Plus and Twitter? Because Google is at least smart enough to know, well, if we keep it within Google Plus, maybe the word doesn't get out as much.
No Facebook on this deal either. So if Twitter and Google Plus makes a lot of sense, especially since they both support hashtags. But I was looking at the video again. I want this thing to be as good as it looks in the video. This idea that you have this little floating window all the time and seeing directions and seeing basically those cards with data. I like this idea, even though it's going to look really geeky. I don't think there's any way you can get around that. And the fact that you talk to it saying, okay, Glass, take a picture, sounds a little strange when you're talking to yourself, I think.
Yeah. Okay, Glass, take us to the next story. Oh, it's Yahoo. What? Yahoo's got a new homepage out today. We mentioned it in the news views. It's got that big scrolly thing in the middle. So I think it looks really nice. It's very tile. That seems to be the new design language, is to make tiles. So it's got tiles up at the top with big stories and then a customized feed for you at the bottom. Now, it's not something you go in and customize. It just basically gives you things based on your Yahoo profile. And if you connect Facebook, based on things that your Facebook friends are liking or things that you're liking. There's a limited amount of customization in there, though. You can click an X on a story and say, I don't want to see this kind of story anymore. And then it'll ask you, like, okay, well, what is it you don't like about it? Do you want to not see stories about football, or just not see stories about the Indianapolis Colts, or not see stories about Kim Kardashian? Or you can click all of those. So it's an interesting way about going customization that's fairly lightweight. It's also got local weather, pop-out email thing. If you use Yahoo Mail, you can hover over it up at the top, drops down your mail. It's got all Yahoo's most popular web properties, according to them: email, news, finance, sports, movie listing, and entertainment stuff. More content sources are supposed to come to it in the future, according to Marissa Meyer. My question to you guys is, this is a really great portal. Do people use portals anymore? I mean, Peter, I know you guys have a lot of experience dealing with this question.
Well, I think that a lot of people still do use Yahoo. They still have a pretty substantial user base, so I wouldn't necessarily discount their importance right now. It just tends to be people that are not the sort of leading edge techie types. It tends to be a more mainstream consumer. I wonder how much those people really want just a generic news feed. I think that they certainly, we've seen that the average person likes the news feed style they get from Facebook, but that tends to be very personalized and a lot of personal information from their friends and family and things like that, which Yahoo is not going to have incorporated here, at least not to the extent that Facebook might, right? So, whether somebody wants a news feed experience, I'm not totally sure whether the average person is looking for that. I certainly think that the trend towards streams and away from pages is something that we're going to see a lot more of just in general when it comes to news online. And we're already seeing that happen with the way that people experience Twitter and, other stream-based platforms. My biggest complaint is that despite the redesign, it still kind of looks ugly. The fonts are ugly. The colors are ugly. It's still kind of an ugly page to look at.
It seems to me that what Yahoo's doing is what a lot of at least apps that I review on a regular basis are doing, where it's customized content, but it's dynamic based on not only your likes and your location, but also what your friends like. I mean, I used my Yahoo back in the day as my homepage for years. I liked customizing my widgets. I had my sports scores. I had my weather. I liked it. It worked out for me. And this seems just sort of like the next evolution of something that people are already familiar with, like Peter said. They've got a base that's not so technical. It's much more mainstream, but is starting to act more like the services and the apps, like a Zeit, for example, where it's supposed to get smarter about what you want to read based on your habits and what your friends like.
Yeah, looking at the site, I mean, I wouldn't say it's pretty, but it's definitely an improvement. I mean, it's a lot flatter. And just going through the news feeds, the feed, what's interesting is how the Yahoo search actually stays on top when you're scrolling. That left sidebar continues to stay persistent. And when you're scrolling down, it's weird. The right side's got a bunch of cards. Flickr is the thing that freezes when you're scrolling down. It's as if, hey, maybe Yahoo wants you to realize, oh, yeah, we have these properties. We forgot that we buried it under all these links. But I think it's a little simpler, a little cleaner. And I think this it's very branded. Lots of purple everywhere. You know you're on Yahoo. So I think this might be a good start. I'm thinking that's probably why Marissa Meyer was on the Today Show explaining it. Because, hey, you're watching the Today Show. You might use Yahoo.
I think the other thing that's cool about this is that they have a unified style across tablet and phone. So when, Sarah, you were talking about how you used to use My Yahoo, that's my big question. I don't think people use home pages anymore. They use mobile apps. And I don't know that Yahoo can get people to use Yahoo on the phone instead of Yahoo apps, or maybe they can get people to use Yahoo apps. But it is nice. I mean, there's the weather, there's the Dow, there's the sports scores, Flickr right at the top, and then I can scroll down and see stories. I feel like they've done a good job with usability. I just not sure how they get people to use it. But we'll have to keep an eye on it and see. Let's talk about something people are always wanting to use, and that's Wi-Fi on an airplane. And Southwest Airlines has some new stuff that you can use it for.
Yeah, they do. Some people love Southwest. Some people hate Southwest. Southwest is known as the airline where you have to get in line early because you don't have assigned seating type thing. But passengers will now be able to watch on-demand movies and TV on their own tablets or smartphones or laptops via Wi-Fi in the planes. Apparently, at least about 75% of the Southwest fleet will be equipped for this using Row 44 satellite technology. And it breaks down like this. There'll be 8 channels of live television. Customers can, again, stream via their devices. And then as of today, the airline will also offer on-demand episodes of some popular TV shows. Which TV shows those are, kind of yet to be determined. The on-demand portion of it is not going to be free, though. One movie will cost $5 per device. The TV package is $5 per day per device. Although just Wi-Fi is $8 per day per device, which already looks really, really good. because I'm used to using GoGo InFlight on Virgin America, which is like, I don't know, $25 per day.
Yeah, they just raised the price.
Yeah, like whether you're on a 6-hour flight or a 1-hour flight, I mean, it's somewhat ridiculous. So to me, I'm like, all I really need is internet. I never have to watch TV again if I had to choose. $8 per day per device, not so bad. Depends on, I guess, how many devices you want to connect. But, you know, Southwest isn't alone in rolling this out. I'm still waiting for a lot more international Wi-Fi, but JetBlue says that they're getting a fast free in-flight Wi-Fi this year. They're going to do sort of an initial trial period. And whether or not you like that GoGo in-flight prices on Virgin America, they've at least sort of upped their service. So the service is supposedly better because if you've ever used it, you may know that it disconnects really regularly. I'm actually planning a trip. I'm in the beginning stages of figuring out, all right, which, you know, how I'm going to get to this other city as quickly as possible and this and that. And I've found that planes that have Wi-Fi, I will consider making a stopover, going out of my way, having something a little bit less convenient because I want to use internet on my flight. Ayaz, have you ever done that?
I want to be on the plane for as few hours as possible. So the Wi-Fi thing doesn't bother me that much. There's no way I would have an extra stop for it. But I do consider it all the time when I'm planning out flights. But I mean, now the differentiators are going away, right? You got JetBlue used to have TV. Then Virgin's got all its on-demand stuff. This idea that you use your own device, I like that. But the idea that you have to pay extra to get content streamed to you, why don't you just keep it local at that point? It just seems like a bit of a money grab from Southwest, even though it seems like a cool function in general. But no, I would never, ever take an extra stop just for Wi-Fi. That's unless it's like a 6-7 hour flight, maybe.
Well, okay. But so you're saying maybe. Peter, am I nuts? I mean, we're all captive audiences on planes. Is the point to be as comfortable as possible or to get off the plane as quickly as possible?
I think it depends on the level of inconvenience you're willing to make for yourself. I mean, I tend to try to only take flights where I know I'm going to get Wi-Fi and airlines that offer it. So it's been a long time since I've flown JetBlue because they didn't have Wi-Fi until, I guess, recently on some flights. But JetBlue has introduced Wi-Fi, right? I haven't flown them in so long, so.
It's new for them this year.
Yeah. The question I have with this thing for Southwest is the movies and TV shows are going to be local, right? I mean, they are going to be on a server on the airplane, not streamed over the network, over the satellite connection, which would actually make a big difference because, if you're going to pay $5, like you don't want to have any issues with the streaming.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is cool. I don't think I would use it. I just want the Wi-Fi to be there. When the Wi-Fi's there, I use it for reading Twitter or reading online stories or doing some chat, something like that. Eventually, it would be nice to just have all access, but having to pay extra for your limited on-demand functions is not real compelling to me. I just want freaking United to put Wi-Fi on their planes, for goodness sake.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But I mean, this isn't really any different than people just using paying a few bucks for the on-demand movies that they get in their seat back screen.
Yeah, I never do that either. But you're totally right. Yeah.
I see people do. I don't think I've ever done it, but I see people do it all the time. And you can watch it on your iPad instead of the crappy screen on the chair in front of you, then I think it's just to me, they're equivalent and it's about what's most convenient for the person on the plane.
Right. You're right. And people will definitely do it. It's not a mistake. Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Podio. All the information you need in your workday might be in a million different places. In fact, I was talking to somebody yesterday who was complaining that the old way they used to do stuff in Hollywood for dailies was just scattered all over the place. Emails, letters, memos, cans of film. Now they've got it all in one place. Wouldn't you like your job to be like that? Have a system built for you that puts everything all in one place? Get rid of all that disorganization. Well, try Podio by Citrix. Podio allows you to manage all projects back and forth, instant communication and workflow from one easy-to-use platform. And it allows you to set it up the way you want to. With Podio, you have the flexibility to customize your collaborative workspaces, manage your projects, and bring your team together. Whether they're coworkers or external contacts or clients, whoever you want, you and your team can work from any mobile device with free Podio apps. In fact, their iPad app is worth checking out alone. It's a fantastic app. So take it for a spin. Start using Podio today. It's Podio. It's free. Visit podio.com, sign up, set up your first workspace, invite your team to get started, and work the way you want with podio.com from Citrix. Get organized. Don't spend any more time wasting time. Go to podio.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Let's talk a little bit about the Java browser plugin hack. It was reported right after Tech News Today yesterday that Apple employees had machines hacked. Apple says it was a limited number of machines, but it was the same group that hit Facebook, in their opinion. Most people think it's probably the same group that hit Twitter as well when Twitter had its logins and passwords stolen. It was spread, according to All Things D, through a discussion website called iPhone Dev SDK. There was a code injection there. It's what is sometimes called a waterhole attack. That's what RSA Security calls it, where you inject code, malicious code, into a place that attracts a lot of the kind of people you're trying to infect. They visit the website, they get infected, they pass it along to their workplace. Investigators suspect that the hackers are a criminal group based in, you thought I was going to say China? No, Russia or Eastern Europe. And, of course, OS X put out a patch today that updates Java to version 1.60_41. And if the version of Java for OS X is lower than 2012-006, Java SE 6 plugin is blocked entirely. In fact, Apple's been pretty much trying to get you to stop using Java. They turn it off automatically after 35 days of disuse. They just removed or disabled it in a lot of cases. I wonder, and I know Security Now is going to go into depth on this. Steve Gibson will give you the real upshot on how this happens and what you need to worry about. But I wonder, is there any point in enabling Java anymore? I mean, I guess if you're in a workplace that has a Java app that you have to use every day as part of your business, but otherwise, I think the average consumer should just shut it off. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, there are obviously people that have specific enterprise needs. I think for the average person, it's very, very infrequent that they would have any use for Java. I do see occasionally something like a Java applet that needs to be installed, again, for some sort of collaboration app or some sort of meeting place type app where you're meeting online or whatever. But for the average person, I think it's very infrequent. You know, it seems to be coming up again and again as a source of issues.
And it's a Java applet. Thank you for pointing out the distinction, Rourke, in the chat room. Also, a lot of people should know it's not JavaScript. JavaScript is an entirely different thing with its own set of security concerns,
yeah.
but different security concerns than Java. What do you think, Ayaz? Have you turned it off?
I don't think so. I mean, I think I still have some applications that run on Java, so I keep them around. I keep it around for that purpose. But I mean, I would see that taking it away from my friends' computers. Like, I'd probably go in and uninstall all kinds of things if I was in charge of that. It's almost like it's a remnant. But then again, a lot of things have holes, right? I mean, operating systems have them. Adobe Flash had it for the longest time. These things just need to be patched with time. It's just, what's the function? If it's not totally integral in your workflow, there's no reason to have it at this point.
Yeah, and then we're talking about the Java plugin. For your browser. We're not even saying that everything you would download that's written in Java would have to be gotten rid of, although that might be the safest way if you just want to be 100% secure. Sarah, what do you think?
I definitely am not using Java on my system regularly. I can't think of the last time I did. Patch it up. I feel like, this is all very reactionary, right? So, you can say, well, no, you don't want to get rid of Java because it has some uses and there are some applications that people use and you know, it's a bit of sort of a legacy system. But then if we continue to have problems that are affecting large companies that, frankly, you know, should be able to avoid that, then I think we have a problem. I don't think, you know, a patch here and there, it's you know, kind of that game of whack-a-mole, you know, where it's just going to keep becoming an issue until we figure out a different solution.
Yeah, and I want to say, I said to keep yourself 100% secure. Obviously, you're never 100% secure, but you want to get as close, make that asymptote get as close as possible. Keep the Java in your mug out of your browser plugins. That's what I say. Let's there's a music conference going on in San Francisco. Is that where the Spotify news is coming out of, Sarah?
Well, The Verge has sources. This is actually the initial Greg Sandoval scoop. For The Verge. He used to work at CNET and has since moved on to The Verge. But this is actually a really interesting story that Spotify wants some price breaks on the royalties that they have to pay to the big music labels like Warner and Sony and Universal. These sources say that they're already in talks with Warner and that Spotify is going to meet with Sony and Universal soon in the next coming weeks. The idea is not only to lower prices for their licensing rights, but also extending their free pricing tier to mobile devices, which is actually not an option at this point. 5 million paying subscribers that pay Spotify of 20 million total users worldwide. So certainly room to grow, but a pretty healthy number of people who are paying subscribers. However, 70% of Spotify's revenues pay those music licensing fees. Another 20% covers customer acquisition. So 10% is paying all of the other company costs. And really, when you work it out, say these sources, there's really not any profit. This is not a sustainable model. Now, Spotify is sort of the darling of streaming music services. They have the most users. They have the most reach worldwide. But we know that some artists have already said Spotify doesn't pay enough in royalties. We're not happy with them. There are a variety of artists who have been very vocal about not wanting to be part of streaming music services. But then again, the industry should want the streaming model succeed because album downloads aren't really making up for the loss of CD sales. We've seen that, you know, if you just look at iTunes Store alone, that stuff has started to trickle down to a bit of a crawl. But you've got a company like Apple, for example, or Google or Microsoft or Amazon, and those are all companies that don't really need to make a profit on music sales or music streaming because they're trying to push a lot of other hardware and software options. So I'm wondering, and like I said, Spotify also wants to extend ad-supported free tier for mobile devices, saying, you know, we'll run ads, but let people have mobile for streaming, which I've said a million times is really, really, really important because you have your music on the go or, you know, via Bluetooth in your car and that sort of thing, that people need that to understand that it's a viable model. Do you think the industry has to bend to Spotify here, Peter? I mean, is streaming inevitable, and is Spotify in a position to change these licensing agreements once and for all?
Well, as someone who's done a music startup, I can tell you that this is a really unhealthy industry. But the biggest problem is that what the market values the music at, what the average person thinks music is worth, right? I mean, $10 a month, even $10 a month for unlimited on-demand streaming of, you know, Spotify's catalog is what, like closing in on 10 million tracks or something like that, or millions and millions of tracks.
Right.
Most people don't even think that's worth it, right? I mean, they only have a few million paying subscribers. They don't have 100 million people that have signed up for it, even at $10 a month, which is very little in the grand scheme of things for considering the breadth of the access. So there's this big gap between what the market says unlimited access to all the world's music is worth and what, you know, the labels and the musicians, the artists think their music is worth. And, you know, artists are going to have to get used to the fact that, you know, people, the model, they got spoiled by the CD, which had these incredibly fat margins and they could sell them for $15 or more and sell millions of them and make tons of money. That model is over. And I think that expecting Spotify to be the next source of big, fat revenue is not realistic because the market doesn't value music in the way that it did before. I mean, that's just the reality. It's not going to come back, and artists are going to have to stop counting on streaming and stop counting on digital downloads as their source of revenue. They're going to have to look at other options. And so I think, for Spotify, they're in a bad place because artists want to make more money, and the market they're being pulled in two different directions, right? The market is telling them that the costs should be even less, that it should be $5 a month maybe. And the artists are telling them that it should be more, that they should be paying out even more in their licensing fees. And I think that something's got to give. And in my experience, it's going to be the artists that are going to have to give rather than the market.
Yeah, I think, in fact, what the artists are going to have to do is strike out on their own more and more. I mean, there's been pressure for that. We've seen a limited number of people have success in that and have successful experiments in that. But right now, nobody wants to budge. Everybody wants the old revenue stream. And like you say, I don't think the music industry has done themselves any favors by consistently blaming piracy. I'm not saying that piracy hasn't had an impact on the revenue stream of the music industry, but it hasn't been nearly as big as they want to imagine because of all the reasons you're saying. We just don't value music as highly, partially because we have so many other things to compete for our attention and so many other ways to entertain us than we did when there were three channels on TV and you bought albums in the record store. And that, you know, those were basically your choices at home. So it makes a big difference, and it's going to have to budge somewhere. And the artists are right to push for a bigger cut of that smaller pie, because, you know, what the music industry has tried to do is say, well, digital's worth less, and so we're going to give you less percentage. They still need the same percentage, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, if I were an artist right now, I would try to get as many streaming services offering my music as possible and not worry about how much I get paid for it, to be honest. And I would focus on touring and merchandise and licensing, you know, to film and TV and advertising, you know, and things like that. Because that's where you're going to make a lot more money. I mean, the Spotify checks are going to be small. That's just the reality. I mean, even you look at something like the amount of money that you could make from having a huge video on YouTube. I mean, you have to have a billion views before you even see what anyone would consider to be a substantial amount of money.
All right, let's finish up with something a little more fun than the music industry, now that Peter and I have solved that. 3D printing pens.
Yeah, this is a real thing. It's a Kickstarter project called the 3Doodler, and its creators have dubbed it the world's first and only 3D printing pen. It had a $30,000 goal, has already over $740,000 of money pledged already. It lets you draw using extruded plastic. So in the demo video, you'll see people drawing with a pen, like on paper, and then they pick up the plastic drawing from that paper. Additionally, you can lift the pen from the page while you're drawing to draw in 3D space. So like they drew like a cube, and you can draw a cube in midair. The pen extrudes heated plastic, which cools and solidifies. Deliveries are estimated to start in September. Okay, obviously it's completely different than the Spotify story. Peter, how cool is this?
I think it's kind of lame, actually. I think all this stuff looks like junk. It's not really a printer. It's like I can, you know, you can already just kind of, you know, do stuff like this already.
Well, I love this, though.
I'm not impressed at all.
It's not a printer. It's a toy.
It's a toy. But it's like the stuff that the work that they're showing looks like crap.
Well, I'd like to see you do better.
Well, yeah, so
I could do as good as that. Well, I mean, yeah, it's not impressive.
The creators of
3D. That's why you use a printer, because it makes it look like a printer will print out nice things.
Well, the creators also said they're going to release some stencils. So if you want to make stuff that looks less like crap, you could trace like pieces of an Eiffel Tower and then put it together. This pen weighs 7 ounces. It's got to be plugged into work. They're saying it's not a toy because that element that heats the plastic gets very hot. So you don't want to have kids messing with it. It's
a dangerous toy.
But it still seems like one of these. With close adult supervision, you get this in some sort of a, you know, it's like the next generation of those stores where you paint plates with your kids.
It's like a sketchbook to me, like a 3D sketchbook. That's what you could do. I mean, there's no way it's going to be as accurate as a printer. I mean, that's just not possible. But I just think as a start, this is a really interesting way to do really quick prototyping of things. Like I used to use like SketchUp to draw things in 3D space. Like forget that. I could just use this pen. Come up with different designs for things and then actually see how it works. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to look super pretty by any means, but I just think that's ridiculous that this thing is going to exist. And I think it only costs like $75 on the Kickstarter to get the item, or $50. But I think all those things are sold out at this point.
That's not bad. I was going to ask how much it was, and $50 seems reasonable for what you're getting there. I totally see what you're saying, Peter. This isn't the thing that's going
to
revolutionize.
I don't mean to like harsh on it. You know, first of all, I don't think they're going to. It's going to. Well, I'd be surprised if. I've seen enough Kickstarter projects flame out that I'm a little skeptical of what they're promising. But I also am just, you know, it just reminds me of like the kind of stuff that you would see at like a craft shop, and not to like disparage that, but it's like it's just not. Like I think calling it a 3D printing pen is a little bit of an exaggeration of what this.
You're definitely going to see this at Color Me Mine.
I'm not sure what that is.
That's what I was talking about when I said the places where you go and paint plates with your kids.
Yeah. No,
it's like the next version of that.
I think it's fine. I'm just saying, like, I think calling it a 3D printing pen is like a little bit of a misrepresentation.
I think if you called it the extruder, it probably wouldn't do very well either.
I mean, obviously calling it like a hobby pen or something like that is not as exciting. But I think calling it a 3D printing pen is like a little bit disingenuous, maybe the way to put it.
All right. Let's finish up with the randomizer. Okay,
to call it a 3D, to call it a 3D printing pen is like to call a pen a 2D printing pen. It's like, no, a pen is not a 2D printing pen. It's just a pen.
I have a 2D printing pen, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, I'm going to sell those on Kickstarter, you know?
$50.
So you're in New York, right, Peter?
Yes.
Well, see, that's the problem. Well, no, actually, New York is one of the happier places, according to this analysis reported in The Atlantic. A Vermont Complex Systems Center did analysis of millions of geotagged tweets from archive.org. They posted their research on archive.org. They called it the hedonometer and found that the happiest state in the United States is Hawaii. The saddest state is Louisiana. The happiest place in the U.S. is Napa. And the saddest place is Beaumont, Texas, in East Texas.
Napa, huh?
Lots of wine.
Makes me happy.
This points out one of my problems with this study, which is they did a semantic analysis, which the authors of the Atlantic story point out doesn't include Spanish. So you're underrepresenting a large portion, especially in the Southwest, of the populace. But also, the word wine counts as a happy word. I imagine a lot of people in Napa are just posted about wine as part of their, you know, daily business. Maybe that makes them happier. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's probably a cool job to work with wine regularly. Can we do that?
We could try that.
Can we incorporate that somehow?
We'll make it a Kickstarter, and we'll figure it out and see if it makes us a happier place.
We used to have that on Fridays.
Well, so now that I've finally finished The Wire, the series, I know that Maryland should be on the sad list because of Baltimore, the saddest city in the world.
I think what's more interesting about this than the happy, sad analysis is the breakdown of the words. So in Napa, the most frequently used words, well, there's curse words on here, but there's also LOL, nice, nice ass, you, hate, bad, not, first, Christmas. And in Beaumont, Texas, the words are LOL, ass, damn, gone, no, haha.
Well, they're just cowboys.
Yeah, you
That's
get
why.
A free mama funny what? Girl sleep like me.
But how do they handle all of my sarcastic tweets?
Yeah, like, that's right. There's no context
awesome.
To the words. Right.
That's probably why New York was so like middle colored. It wasn't exactly super happy, and it wasn't super sad. Just really sarcastic.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to look at the data there. I like it. Let's move on to the calendar. What's happening, Sarah?
Well, we got some earnings. HP is reporting their earnings tomorrow. Of course, is February 21st. Also tomorrow, we mentioned this yesterday, but it's worth a reminder, Ubuntu phone and tablet developer previews are both happening tomorrow again, February 21st.
Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
We got an email from Alan. He says, as a frequent traveler to Asia, I can attest that Microsoft Office is easily one of the most pirated pieces of software among both home users and small businesses. I wonder if Microsoft has simply decided that this will be the last version of Office easily available as a standalone box at all. Microsoft clearly wants people to go on the subscription model, both to even out their revenue stream and also as an anti-piracy measure, and their current Office subscription is pretty compelling. 5 easily transferable licenses across multiple platforms serves the power user or family upgrade very well. I would speculate that most normals probably buy their copies when they buy a new computer, just as most of them only buy Windows copies as a part of an OEM install. Therefore, from that perspective, they might be willing to forego a few box sales and some further leakage to Google Docs if their overall revenue projection is better.
Now, obviously, they think the revenue projection is better. They wouldn't be doing it this way, I'm fairly certain. And Microsoft clarified today that in the event that a customer buys Office 2013, installs it on a PC, and that PC fails under warranty, the customer can contact support to receive an exemption to activate Office 2013 software on the replacement PC. Now, when you're computer's out of warranty, I would like that to be the case as well. But I know with Windows activation codes, when it notices that you've changed enough hardware that it thinks it's on a different machine and it won't activate, you call Microsoft and you don't even speak to a person. You just go through and answer questions saying, no, I was just rebuilding my PC, and then they give you a new activation code.
Yeah, it's pretty. I've done it. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. So I imagine that's going to be the same thing with Office.
Got another email from Anthony who says, I'd like to continue the discussion from episode 693 from yesterday about Google stores, physical Google stores. This would be a great move. Google could put a face to their business. And like Tom alluded, Google could be the first store that doesn't care if you buy anything, all thanks to search. Also, Google could demo their 1 gigabit internet in Kansas City, build up some more mindshare. Lastly, Google could offer local shops tips on AdWords. And most shockingly, Google could sell Apple products. They pay a lot of money to be the default search engine, and Google would rather you buy an iPhone from them than be tempted by a Windows phone at an AT&T store. Larry Page, stop what you're doing right now and call up Mall of America.
I get the logic there, right? That's why Google wants to be on the iPhone, is because they make their money off ads. And the more people that use Google, the more ads they can expose and make more money. Is he crazy to think a Google store would sell non-Google products, though? I mean, we definitely see some of that with accessories in an Apple store.
I could see them selling other Android devices besides their own. But I don't really see them selling Apple devices. I don't think Apple would want them to.
They could sell a custom iPhone with all the Google apps replacing all the...
That would be the weirdest thing ever. Can you imagine?
Customized,
I need a new
iPhone.
Google store nearby.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening.
They can sell you a patent license for it, right? When you buy it. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching. And thank you, Peter Rojas, for being with us. Let folks know where they can follow, well, obviously, GDGT.com and anything else you got going on online.
At Peter Rojas on Twitter. And you will see me top up from time to time on Engadget. And I will be helping the live blog of the PlayStation 4 announcement this evening.
Oh, that's great. Like old times.
Like old times, yeah. It's kind of weird to be back in the mix there, but I'm really enjoying it. The team there is awesome. Everyone is really talented, and it's been really fun to be hang out with all those guys.
Yeah, so check out their live blog, Engadget.com. I think that's at, 6 p.m. Eastern, right?
Yeah, 6 p.m. Eastern. I'm sure it will not start on time.
3 p.m. Pacific, and we'll be covering it on Twit as well. Also, submit to our subreddit. We got 13,000 people in our subreddit now, technewstoday.reddit.com. Mm-hmm. It's a place to go to let folks know what you would like us to talk about on the show. Vote things up, vote things down. Even things that I vote up don't always make it in the show, but we do look at this every single day. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, and give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT Show. Tomorrow is Thursday, and that means an all-new Tech News Today. We'll see you then.